Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Influence with Michelle Martin on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
This is really exciting. Some 2 billion activists have made a commitment to He for She to work for an equal world right now. But since then, a business school right here in Singapore has made that same commitment. Now, part of the equation, surely, for more women on C-suites or on boards is for women to have a great business school education or have a place in a business school. So how is INSEAD translating its commitment to the He for She Alliance? Let's find out for our next edition of Conversations with the Dean. He's Dean of INSEAD, Ilian Mihoff. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Michelle. Thank you for having me again here with you.
Absolute pleasure. I don't think many people know that you're actually a He for She champion as an individual, but we're talking today about the school being part of the UN's He for She Alliance. Now, why was it important to you that the school joined this alliance?
Well, I think that at INSEAD we have been always focusing on diversity. Initially, it was diversity about nationalities. You know, INSEAD started with the idea of uniting Europe and bringing together people from all over Europe. Eventually, you know, priorities change, and today our priority is to ensure gender diversity, diversity of people with different backgrounds, and so on. And I think that this movement towards gender equality, gender balance, gender equality rather than just diversity, this movement has started a long time ago, but I would say that despite all the efforts that have been done in the last 40, 50 years, mm-hmm. we're still far from where we wanted to be. You know, there is this statistic that people put on all kinds of websites that to reach equal pay, it will take us at the current rate of closing the gap, it will take us 257 years. And that's just not right. You know, it's it is a priority for us. I think that it creates a better environment in the school, in the boardroom, in the companies, if you have gender balance. It's just as simple as that.
Yeah, I remember covering an early story back in 2011, 2012 on board agenda, and what it was doing in Singapore to increase the number of women on boards. And one of my guests said the increase was so slow, it was like watching grass grow. You know, just to your point of 250 years. So when it comes to the real action, what does INSEAD plan to do to ensure that it fulfills its commitment? What are you looking at when it comes to your board? What are the different aspects of diversity that you're looking at? First, are you aiming for gender parity? And can you also talk about what you're doing in the area of diversity?
Right. So we actually plan by 2023 to have a board with gender equality, so 50% women. Mm-hmm. I think that it is important because, you know, we do talk a lot. We have an initiative for gender equality, or INSEAD Gender Initiative, where we do a lot of research, we build cases, we promote examples where, you know, people are doing, you know, a lot of action in this dimension. But you have to walk the talk, right? Yeah. You know, you have to be also not just saying, you know, you should do this, you know, we should also do that. So by 2023, we hope that we'll have a board with 50% women. And I think that it is important. First, the dynamics in the boardroom. I have seen this board now for 8-9 years mm-hmm. as a dean, and we have been increasing the percentage of women from about, I think it were 28 or 29 in the beginning, and now it will be 50% in 2 years when I finish my deanship. And the discussions are just different, and I think that it is the perspectives are different, and you can see the value of diversity. And I think that the reason that we put it as an active point consciously to try to achieve this is because sometimes we do have blind spots, and there is sometimes information that we just don't notice. Let me give you one example. We had this opening of the MBA class in August this year for the new class that just started in the fall. And the speaker was Milena Mondini, who is a CEO of Admiral. She's one of the 8 women at the helm of FTSE 100 company in the UK. So Milena is an INSEAD alumna. And, you know, I was just listening to her and I was just thinking, you know what? I was not even aware, you know, that she's out there leading a multi-billion pound company with a very clear vision where she's heading and such a great role model when you listen to her. So by having actually these conscientiously trying to get into the right mode, I think that you uncover gems like Milena and you say, you know, I would like to have her on the board of INSEAD because, you know, the vision is so, so powerful. So I think that's why it has to be an active agenda rather than let's just see, you know, what happens. So that's what we're planning to do. In terms of broader diversity, mm-hmm. we have a pretty diverse board. You know, we have people from, I think, at all continents on our board, but we still need to increase. Maybe we don't have Latin American, but we need to bring more people into the board from different backgrounds. We have two African women on the board, alumni, both of them are from INSEAD. We have people from the Philippines, from Singapore, from China. So it is very interesting when you see how the board changes over time. Again, I've been watching it for 8 years, and it was very European board in the beginning. And today it is a global board, Americans, Canadians from all over the world. And it's just the perspective is different. The discussions are different. I think that the willingness to make an impact is different because you have a different perspective. So,
you haven't shied away from actual, you know, firm commitments. Was that required by the He for She Alliance? Or is that something that INSEAD that you wanted to do?
Well, I think that we wanted to be very specific because once you have a goal like this, you work harder. You know, you have a quantitative objective. And I think we're pretty close there. I think that it is within a reach. And it's within a reach because of the work, you know, the board has done, that our chairman has done in the last 7 years working together with the school. So I think that this is possible. And I hope that we will be very aggressive also in trying to get, you know, our next maybe chair of the board to be a woman and or maybe on the next dean to be a female. So it's we need women in leadership roles because they give an example that inspires others to go and become, you know, entrepreneurs, leaders, business women, and we need this.
Absolutely. Now, one of INSEAD's organization-wide commitments is an outreach for more MBA prospects. I understand the goal is to reach a minimum 40% female participation by 2024-2025. I wonder if you can share how that male-to-female ratio has changed over time.
Yes, absolutely. It's and I think that it is a very important statistic because I started INSEAD in 1996, so this is my 25th anniversary at INSEAD. It's my long time. And when I started INSEAD, I think that we had about maybe 16-17% female students. And now in retrospect, when I look back, you know, there were a lot of bad behaviors in the classroom, a lot of aggressiveness sometimes. And you realize that, you know what, it's when there's something in our brains. I mean, I'm not a neuroscientist or anthropologist, but there must be something in us, you know, when they're like 85% men and only 15% women, all the men, you know, try, you know, to compete and, you know, to show that testosterone is higher and they're aggressive towards each other, towards the professors and so on. So the dynamics are difficult. And then women don't want to come in an environment like this. Mm. Female professors have an extremely difficult time. I mean, if you're a male professor, at the end of the day, they attack you, attack back and so on. But if you're a female professor and you have 85% in the classroom sitting against you, a man, it is difficult. I think that it was very, very difficult. So now the fact that we changed over time, we went in the late 2000s, we went to by 2010, I think it was about 32% or so. This year, we're 39%. So I think that it is quite reasonable to expect to get to 40%. Our big problem is that we are trying to balance different forms of diversity, right? So, you know, sometimes if you look at the raw statistics in other schools, in the U.S. in particular, you'll see that they have 42 to 45% women. And one might ask, why doesn't INSEAD have this? And the answer is because as a global school, we have people coming from different parts of the world with different different cultures and different aspirations. In China, in fact, we have 60% women. And in the US as well, we have about 42% very often are women in the applicant pool and also among our students. But in Europe, you know, where it's our main base, like Germany or Italy or Spain, we have 12 to 22% women. And if we try to maintain the diversity of nationalities, then it is difficult to achieve the same rate as in the US. If we set as an objective, let's get to 50%, we probably can if we admit only certain nationalities. That will create a different dynamic. So basically what I'm trying to say is that we have a very difficult task now to go into these countries where we have underrepresentation of women, understand why there are much fewer applications, and then try to promote a business school as a good career opportunity for women.
Yeah, can you help us understand? I mean, INSEAD is 100 years old, and I understand that for a large part of its history, it was primarily tilted towards more men getting an MBA education. Why is it important for a woman to get an MBA education?
So, you know, we are 60 years old, we're younger.
Oh, like, pardon me.
Not 100 years.
We were old. Pardon me.
No. We started in 1959 in Fontainebleau. It's an important story because it started after the Second World War.
Ah, okay.
Our founder wanted to bring together the Italians, the Brits, the Germans, the French, who were fighting with each other, to bring them into one place and say, let's just do business together and work together rather than kill each other. It was like 10 years literally after the Second World War. And, you know, in Europe, it was the idea that you bring these people together who actually might have been firing guns against each other, you know, 10 years before that. The idea that, you know, this is a peace project in addition to educational project was a bit crazy because the Europeans were fighting every 20 years. There'll be a war in Europe, you know, between the French, the Germans, the Brits and the French and whoever, you know, is out there. They were fighting with each other all the time. So it was always a project to get together and work together, build businesses together rather than fight. It is true that in the first 7 years, 8 years, it was exclusively male school. So the first women were admitted in 1967. And I think that, you know, I don't want to justify this in any way, but the norms were like this. You know, people had this mindset that, you know, only men go to school. And I say this very often because today we have norms that are really, some norms that are really anachronistic, that are old and that are wrong, but we just stick with them because they were there. So the same thing, you know, we changed this, many other schools changed. Today, of course, to think that you have male-only institution is just crazy. I think that it is important because very often, you know, to answer your question, why is it important to have women do MBA? Because I think that for many women, it's a good career opportunity. And I think that the reason that we need to be proactive is because many women do not see the possibilities behind an MBA. And if we believe, and the evidence is very clear on this, but if we believe that diversity in the boardroom leads to better decisions, if you have more women, if you believe that we need more than 8 out of the 100 CEOs of FTSE 100 companies to be women, we have to have more female MBAs. You know, there's just, you cannot get, you know, the outcome right if you don't get the input right. So
Absolutely. Can you tell us about what your goals are when it comes to women on the teaching staff?
Right. So this used to be difficult. And, you know, there were many articles talking about how male-dominated the academic profession is. And it was true. And we used to have an excuse to say, look, you know, when you look at the PhD programs, are very tilted towards male. And therefore, you know, if you have 80% of the candidates male, it's difficult to achieve parity in the faculty, given the numbers. That used to be true, mm-hmm. maybe 30, 40 years ago. It's not true anymore. So, in fact, I think that in the previous call, I talked about my former dean of faculty, the one I appointed, Laurence Capron, is a professor of strategy, and she was a dean of faculty between 2018 and 2021. So we have three-year terms. She was the first female faculty dean, which, by the way, is the most difficult job at INSEAD. You know, I always say that the dean's job is easy. You know, you just go to receptions and drink champagne and, you know, make speeches, show presentations. But the dean of faculty has to deal with 150 people, 160 people. Many of them have tenure. You can't fire them. They can tell you anything they want. You know, it's like, so anyway, so Laurence, what one of the things that she did, I was actually very worried when I appointed her, because some of our colleagues are not, you know, a nice bunch of people. They can come and tell you, you're an idiot, you know, and you cannot do anything. And they can be very aggressive. I was a dean of faculty before being a dean, and I can tell you it was
tough. It sounds like a tough job. So it sounds like you're waking up earlier than 5:30 than today, huh?
Absolutely. Go to bed much later and wake up earlier. And but so Laurence did an amazing job. I think definitely the best dean of faculty that we've ever had. But one thing that she did, that's the reason I'm talking about, mm-hmm. is because she went and gathered data from we hire from many schools, but mostly they're like 10, 15 schools that we hire from, you know, PhD students. So she went in marketing, in operations, in economics, in every field, in strategy, mm-hmm. to see how many female PhD candidates there are and how many male. And I was shocked by the data, because with the exception of finance, in all other business subjects, we had parity. So there are 50% female PhDs. In some cases, like marketing, there was 60% female PhDs. Wow. So you cannot use this as an excuse anymore to say, well, there are no students out there. And I'm very happy to report that last year that we hired, before the pandemic, so we're not hiring now, but last year we hired, I think, at about 12 people, and there was 50% women, 50% men.
Fantastic.
So.
Wonderful.
I mean, it takes time to change to the overall, but it's, I think, and that's our commitment as well. In the 3 years overall, we have 50% men, 50% women when we hire.
What is it currently, the balance?
Oh, the overall, I think that today we are at maybe 23% women. When we're not in a very good shape, I know it's like compared to other schools, but we want to make sure mm-hmm. we're getting there. We were at 16%. It was embarrassing that, you know, we were ranked number one business school in the world by Financial Times in 2016. And you look at the column with, you know, the gender balance in the faculty, and we are number, I think, at 87 out of 100. So it was embarrassing. So we're moving now in the right direction, but it takes time. So
I love your candor, Dean. I'm going to ask a tough question, because, you know, when we talk about targets, we have to ask about accountability. So, you know, who will hold the school to account for progress on these targets?
Yeah, that's a good question. So You know, people like you who ask tough questions, they will hold us
Publicly,
accountable.
live.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe I'll be here again next year and you'll ask, you know, where's the 50%? You promised 50%.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
That would be great.
No. Yeah. So again, when we make a public commitment like this, it is visible. So we have a very engaging community, very engaged community among our alumni. I'm sure that they will come back to us. You know, we will work with the UN initiative, he for she, obviously, because we will be reporting back next year where we are in terms of our targets. I mean, it's not, I think at the end of the day, it's not about accountability. It is about awareness for ourselves. I think that all of us want to achieve these goals, but when you put it as a target and you make a public commitment, it is in front of you almost all the time, and you're saying, okay, there are thousands of things that I have to do every day, right? So I have to think about, you know, the this program. I have to think about these students. I have to think. But when you put it out there as a commitment, this thing is always in front of your face, and that just raises awareness that you have to do something. So I think it will do it.
We'll make a date for that show in 2023,
Yeah.
2025. Now, what are some of the
Yes.
real challenges that you are facing in meeting these targets, Ilian?
So, to be completely honest, on the faculty side, the biggest challenge is in France. It is very difficult in these days. Of course, you know, you have to. People have dual careers, right? So, bringing your spouse to France in Fontainebleau and finding a job for them is sometimes very difficult. And still, the social norm, it's changing. I would say that probably what I'm going to say 5 years ago was more true than now. But still, to me, it seems that it is more acceptable for a woman to follow the husband than for a husband to follow a woman and stay without a job and look for a job for 5, 6 years. That's a norm that somehow it seems to be, when you look at the data, you know, at least at INSEAD, I see it. Now, so finding jobs for the trailing spouses, in this case husbands, is a big priority. So I set up, you know, some initiatives that are trying to get your headhunters involved and so on. Also because most of these people come from English-speaking environment, and in France, you know, you have to speak French. So that is certainly one of our big concerns. The other concern is that in academia, it is, you know, the less, what should I say, the less risky thing, the safer thing to do is to stay in Europe or stay close to the US because of the academic world here in Singapore. I've been here now 20 years, and it changed dramatically. You know, it's night and day between what it was in 2002 and 2021. You know, they're great professors at NUS, SMU. You can communicate, you can talk, collaborate, and so on. But it's still, Singapore is small. When you're in Europe, you know, you can go to London, you can go to Barcelona, you can present in all kinds of places, or you can fly to the US in like 6 hours. So a lot of the young people that we hire, many of them are very risk averse and prefer to stay there. And then if you want to be in Europe and you're offered to be in the forest of Fontainebleau and you're 29-year-old, you're just thinking, really, you know, I would prefer to be, you know, in London, or I would prefer to be in New York. And so, you know, Singapore offers a lot of attractiveness for young people, but at the same time, from an academic point of view, you know, Singapore is very small, and you need collaboration. You need to fly to conferences, meet people, and so on.
That's so
So
interesting to
I think
hear.
of this, yeah.
This insight into the academic world is really interesting as well.
Yeah.
It's called he for she for a reason. So why is male allyship so important? And can you share some examples of how this can have a positive impact when we're talking about diversity?
Well, I think that it is very important because of the simple realization that still most of the executive positions are taken by men. Most of the power is sitting with men. So if we don't have the male executives thinking about this carefully, deliberately, saying, you know, how can I ensure gender parity? How can I promote women who are capable and deserving? How do I unbias or debias my thinking? Then I don't think that much will happen. And there's a lot of studies. One of my former colleagues, Herminia Ibarra, talked a lot about this, that what women need today in order to succeed is not just mentorship, not tell them, okay, this is how you do these things and, you know, this, but sponsorship. And sponsorship is very different, because sponsorship is to give actually a role to a woman and to say, you know what, like in my case, I was a bit uncomfortable, you know, giving Laurence this role, because I was thinking, what if people start attacking her and then I feel guilty and, you know, she has all these issues. But, you know, taking this step and saying, you know, this person should do this job, she's absolutely capable, and if needed, you know, I'll stay with her in the line of fire, and you know, I'll try to make sure that we go through this together. So I think that sponsorship is important because of this power imbalance between men and women, and that's, to be honest, that's the only way actually that we can, not the only way, but it's a very important way of reaching you know, higher numbers in the boardroom or in the executive positions. If the world was 50-50, we don't need this, of course, but it's,
Yeah, but we're working towards that. Before we let you go, Dean, there are many organizations that are listening in who may be interested in, you know, jumping on the he for she alliance. Can you share some steps, any steps that men in these organizations can take to move towards the goal for he for she? Maybe not the whole organization as a whole, but what can men do?
Well, I think that in general, this is a really good movement, in my view, because it allows us to share ideas of what men can do in this organization. So I talked to, I was in a panel with Bob Moritz from PwC, the chairman of PwC, and, you know, they've been doing a lot of work around sponsorship and how, you know, first, men to understand that sponsorship is different from mentorship. That sponsorship is actively promoting a capable woman or colleague who deserves to be promoted. So I think that understanding what sponsorship means is the first step. Understanding, you know, what are the barriers that women are facing. And in different organizations, it's different. I mean, I think that at INSEAD, as I said in the beginning, the big issue with the female professors was the hostility in the classroom. And, you know, we actually intervened. And not only this, but I created, as a dean of faculty 10 years ago, I created an initiative for learning innovation and teaching excellence, where we are actually putting a coach in the classroom. We actually expanded it to everybody, but in the initial idea was to do it for women. A coach is sitting in the classroom and collecting data, giving feedback, you know, how you can improve your teaching.
Wow.
Because the results are amazing. I mean, it's like, I must say that it's one of the things that I'm most proud of, because thanks to this, I believe it's thanks to this, we have really capable people doing this thing, really smart. You know, we have two people are here in Singapore now, but, you know, we never had a female assistant professor winning the Best Teacher Award until 5-6 years ago. It was always, you know, the experienced male professors and so on. Mm. And in the last few years, I have so many of our female colleagues. I mean, the second or third year, you know, it's like, you know, I was in my second and third year, I was trying to survive in the classroom. And now they're going in and they're winning Best Teacher Awards, which at INSEAD is very difficult, by the way. And it's
do the students
it just makes
decide?
me very
I'm
happy.
sorry, Dean. Do the students
The
decide on
students
this
vote.
award? Okay.
It's not the decision of the dean or somebody
Or
else. The
somebody
students
would.
go and vote, and the students at INSEAD are pretty harsh. They would not vote if let's have gender diversity. They would say,
Right.
this was an amazing class. I mean, one of the professors that won last December, Winnie Jung, she's based here.
Mm-hmm.
Winnie is teaching a course on psychological issues in management.
Yeah.
So it was unbelievable when they announced the award. It's announced in the last moment. The students just got so excited, started clapping, shouting, and so on. I was observing this here. So these are the kind of things that
like
in different organizations. Yeah, but in different organizations, you have to do different things. In my institution, we have to make sure that they have the support to become to get over the tipping point, because again, we are. I don't want to brag, but we're hiring very smart people. It's like we get like Winnie coming with a PhD from Yale, and before that people coming with PhDs from top schools. It's just inconceivable that these people cannot be effective teachers. All of them are just so smart, but there is something, there is a technique, there is a skill that you have to help them develop, and then you unleash the power.
I want to be a fly on the wall during those coaching sessions, Dean. I mean, it sounds absolutely fascinating. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And it's just absolutely terrific to know that INSEAD has joined UN Women's He for She Alliance. And we thank you, as always, for this enlightening conversation.
Thank you very much, Michelle. Pleasure to be here.
Dean Ilyan Mihov is Dean of INSEAD. Thanks for being with us here on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO, available on Google Play or the App Store.